Nityayam Vishnupad, Paramahamsa, Paravidakacharya, Satrashita Shushimad, Swami Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. All glory, simple devotees. All glory, simple devotees. All glory, simple devotees. All glory to Shishi Guru and Gauranga. So today we're reading from the glorious Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, Chapter 17, verses 46 to 51. The first verses are quite short. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. So, which verse do they have up there? I can't see. 51. So we'll do that verse, but then I'll read the previous verses that come after. That come before it. Please repeat after me. Tatapi Tandra Darshana Shravana Prabhave Sakala Dasera Loka Ha'ila Vaishnave. Tatapi Tandra Darshana Sravane Prabhave. Sakala Desara Loka Ha'ila Vaishnave. Tatapi Tandra Darshana Shravane Prabhave. Sakala Deshara Lokaha Ila Vaishnave. Others? Ladies? Please repeat after me. Tatapi still Tanra his Darshana of seeing Shravana of hearing Prabhave by the potency Sakala all Deshara of countries Loka people Ha'ila became Vaishnave, pure devotees of the Lord. So what should I do? Should I just read this verse and then read the previous ones? Okay. Translation. Although Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not manifest his natural ecstatic love, everyone became a pure devotee simply by seeing and hearing him. So I'll read the previous verses that come up to this. Thus all entities in the forest of Jharikhanda, some moving and some standing still, became maddened by hearing the holy name of Lord Krishna vibrated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Purport. The great forest of Jharikhanda is a great tract of land, including Ataganda, Denkanala, Angula, Lahara, Kiyanjada, Bhamada, Bonhai, Gangapura, Chotanagapura, Yashapura, and Saraguja. All these places, which are covered with mountains and jungles, are known as Jharikhanda. Verse 47. In all the villages through which the Lord passed, and in all the places he rested on his journey, everyone was purified and awakened to ecstatic love of God. Verses 48 and 49. When someone heard the chanting of the holy name from the mouth of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and someone else heard this chanting from that second person, and someone again heard this chanting from the third person, everyone in all countries became a Vaishnava through such disciplic succession. Thus everyone chanted the holy name of Krishna and Hari, and they danced, cried, and smiled. Purport. The transcendental potency of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is herein explained. First, the holy name is vibrated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When someone hears from him directly, he is purified. Then another person hears from that person. He is also purified. And in this way, the purification process is advanced among pure devotees. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the supreme personality of Godhead, and no one can claim his potency. Nonetheless, if one is a pure devotee, hundreds and thousands of men can be purified by his vibration. This potency is within every living being, provided he chants the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra offenselessly and without material motives. When a pure devotee chants offenselessly, another devotee will become a Vaishnava, and from him another Vaishnava will emerge. This is the parampara system. Text 50. The Lord did not always manifest his ecstasy, being afraid of a great assembly of people. And the Lord kept his ecstasy concealed. Then today's verse. Although Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not manifest his natural ecstatic love, everyone became a pure devotee simply by seeing and hearing him. Purport. Srila Rupa Goswami has described Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as Mahavadanyaya Avatara, the most munificent incarnation. Although Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is not physically present now, simply by chanting his holy name, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda, people throughout the world are becoming devotees. This is due to the ecstatic chanting of the holy name of the Lord. It is said that a pure devotee can see the Lord at every moment, and because of this, he is empowered by the Lord. This is confirmed in the Brahma Samhita 5:38. Premanjana charita bhakti vilochanena santasa deva hridayeshu vilokayanti. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared 500 years ago, but it cannot be said that now the potency of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is less than it was in his presence. By hearing Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu through the parampara system, one can be purified. Therefore, in this verse it is said, Tathapi tandra darshana shravana prabhave. It is not that everyone is able to see Krishna or Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu physically, but if one hears about him through his books, like Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, and through the Parampara system of pure Vaishnavas, there is no difficulty in becoming a pure Vaishnava, free from mundane desires and personal motivations. Om Jnana Timarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. I was born to the darkest of ignorance, but my spiritual master opened my eyes with a torchlight of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisance unto him. So it says here that the Lord did not always manifest his ecstasy, being afraid that of the great assembly of people coming. So this ecstasy that the Lord is feeling is actually available to everyone, because the natural position of the soul, as described in the Vedanta Sutra, is that it is anandamaya vyasat, that the living entity, the jiva, is a, that we are actually pleasure-seeking and pain-avoiding. That's the nature of the soul. One of the criteria, we are all pleasure-seeking and pain-avoidance. Because that's in material world, we always try to avoid pain. But in the spiritual world, there is no pain to avoid. Now, sometimes karmis may say, you know, well, you have to experience the bad so that you can appreciate the good, right? We've heard that being said before. But in the spiritual world, there is no bad. So then, how can you appreciate the good? That question will arise. The answer is that I'm feeling more ecstatic than I was yesterday, and tomorrow I will be feeling more ecstasy than I am feeling today. Because spiritual ecstasy is ever expanding. Huh? One of the names for Krishna is Brahma, which means always expanding. So that means, if a mathematical expression for that would be that spiritual ecstasy is monotonically increasing. That with every moment of time, it's always increasing. So you can appreciate the difference that of your ecstasy today than yesterday when we get to that level. So it's always, that's the nature of the soul, to always be feeling ecstasy. So if we're not feeling ecstasy, that means we're in a diseased condition. We're a diseased condition. So the whole process of Krishna consciousness is to remove this diseased condition. The whole material world is a reformatory project of Lord Krishna to reclaim the conditioned souls, to bring us back to our sanity. So even Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he always tried to suppress his ecstasy in public because he didn't. He didn't want to attract large crowds, you know, and people who came with, some people might come for wrong motivations, just to see the yogi, you know, performing some, you know, there's like in Bengal, there's like these sahajas, they artificially display ecstasies, artificial ecstasies. So in the authorized devotees, like Srila Prabhupada and the Acharya, they never experience, even though they're internally experiencing ecstasy, they never display them. They do in all their efforts to keep that under control, because they're coming in the platform of a Madhyama Adhikara, and that is a Mahabhagavat. So for preaching, there has to be that distinction. But still, sometimes the ecstasy bursts through uncontrollably. There is several instances in the case of Srila Prabhupada, specifically one time it was in 1975 in Chicago. It was an initiation ceremony. And several of my godbrothers were there. I wasn't there, but they were there and they told me what happened. And you can also hear it, or you can experience it in the Bhaktivedanta archives. If you're a regular listener, to Srila Prabhupada lectures, which you should all be if you're taking seriously that Srila Prabhupada is the center of ISKCON and is the Shiksha Guru for everybody, I mean, you should all be taking Shiksha from Srila Prabhupada by regularly listening to his lectures and conversations, not just reading the books. So anyway, Srila Prabhupada was lecturing on the pastime of Ajameel and how Ajameel would call his son, you know, Narayan. Narayan, do this. Narayan, do that. You know, Narayan, get my shoes. And Srila Prabhupada repeated the expression Narayan 4 or 5 times. And then he just went silent. And you can hear this on the lecture. He just went silent. Not for a few seconds. But it's like dead silence for about 2 or 3 minutes. Total silence. And everybody, they could see that Srila Prabhupada just went, he left this world. And then when Prabhupada returned to consciousness, he just said, he just ended the lecture and walked out of the room. Thank you very much. And he left. Because didn't want to do that. He didn't want to, just by saying Narayan, not even Radha Krishna, Narayan. he just did that. So, not that Srila Prabhupada is, he's also feeling the ecstasy. As it's one, says, it is said that a pure devotee can see the Lord at every moment. And because of this, he is empowered by the Lord. So there's one time one of my god sisters, a very innocent girl, you can tell in her voice when she's asking Srila Prabhupada, she said, Srila Prabhupada, have you seen Krishna? And Prabhupada said, yes. And she said, really? Every day. She wasn't challenging, she was just asking, you know. Really? She's like astonished. You sing really? Every day. He said, every day. It's not that Srila Prabhupada didn't see what Krishna was wearing or what he was doing. So sometimes amongst the Sahajas in Bengal, they sometimes they fake this bhava. You know. So Bhaktisiddhanta tells a very nice story about this so-called bhava. That there was one village in Bengal and there was two factions in the village. There's always... there's a joke about Bengalis, but they're so political. If you have two Bengalis, you have two political parties. So anyway, there was two factions in the village, and so they wanted to have a kirtan mela, and they were like, who's going to outdo the other? So the first faction, they had a kirtan mela, they hired some really famous kirtaneering group, right? And they came, and they kirtan, and they're wailing and everything, and then, in the middle of the kirtan, the lead singer just collapsed on the ground. And he was like laying there for hours, you know, 6, 8 hours, you know, practically the whole, half of the day he was laying there. And then it was, wow, Mahabhava. This guy is in my experiencing spiritual ecstasy. So then he got up, you know, and there everybody's touching his feet, and he walked away. So then the second party, they were like, you know, not to be like, they had such a, you know, we have to outdo this, you know, we can't be outdone by them. So they also organized a kirtan group. So then they paid, obviously they paid them like, you know, 20 rupees, this kirtan group. But the unfortunate thing was for them was that the first kirtan group, they did their kirtan, it was in January. The second kirtan group could not organize it until April. So now now anybody's been to Bengal at 2 different times, yeah, they'll know that the weather is different. In January it's cold, and in April you could cook chapatis on the ground. So the second kirtan group comes in, and he's, you know, doing kirtan, and then he also goes into bhava and collapses on the ground. But after about 45 minutes baking in the ground, he gets up. And then they are, what's this? After only 45 minutes, you know, it says, well, how much bhava do you want for 20 rupees anyway? Because if he had been in real bhava, he could have, you know, he would have laid there. But, you know, it's only 20 rupees worth of bhava. You know. So that's the difference that's not, you know, that's not the ecstasy of the soul. So we have to be careful about that. That's cheating. The cheating mentality is there. So Srila Prabhupada often would express that the devotees should not express, even if they become advanced, he writes in his books, they should not express any of their deep sentiments in public, you know, not discuss intimate pastimes of the Lord in public, and specifically the rasalila. These things should not be done in public. This is only for a higher level. If he only discussed these kinds of intimate bhakti, Lord Chaitanya only discussed these type of intimate pastimes with two or three people, not even like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, the most learned philosopher, scholar of his time. Lord Chaitanya never discussed this with him. He discussed Vedanta. With Ramananda Roy, he discussed, and maybe one or two others, Swarup Damodar, very few people he would discuss these things. And he wouldn't, no public displays. Anybody who begins to do these type of things, they're very questionable. They should be avoided. So this is something that Srila Prabhupada clearly instructed. Now, what is it that is blocking our experience of ecstasy? Huh? What is the, in the Shastras, it gives prohibitions against sense gratification, right? That restrictions that the Vedas explain how to do things, how to fulfill our karmic desires, material desires, according to Shastra, and that's karma. And then vikarma is when we do things against Shastra. But both of these are material. And Baladeva Vidyabhushan explains that either piety or impiety are both bad, because they keep you in the material world. Even if you do some pious thing, you know, whatever, you have to come back and experience it, the result of that pious activity. So both of these things keep us in the world. Now, if we break the regulative principles, then that's considered sinful, right? And when maybe we think of the word sin, then there's some whole, like a whole guilt trip, a whole emotional guilt trip, because most people, most devotees, you know, we're not very advanced, so inevitably fall down is there, right? I'm sure any senior devotee, many times junior devotees come and express the problems they're having in their devotional life. You know, as an astrologer, I hear so many problems that the devotees are having. And who do I go to? I don't even know who I'm going to go to. But we always have some problems. There is some difficulty. I remember one of my godbrothers, I met him about 1983. He had been in the library party, very nice devotee, but he was in a deep, deep state of depression because he was having some sensual problems. And he was, you know, he was on the verge. He was feeling suicidal. He wanted to give up devotional service because he felt so fallen. I'm sure you might have heard of examples of that. Because of this feeling of guilt that I'm not good enough. And of course, there's another trick of Maya to get you to quit the process. Oh, I'm not good enough. So this idea, this guilt riddance of that it's a sinful activity, it has a certain utility to it, that we know we shouldn't do it. But it has a limit, because if it gets you to the point that you feel guilty, to the point that you want to give up devotional service, then it's not doing the right thing. It's not fulfilling. What is the real reason beyond this concept of guilt, or that it's sinful or pious, is that if we think that we can derive happiness through our material senses, through our body, then why should we try to get happiness in another way? Right? If I'm feeling, you know, the happiness through my senses, then what's the incentive to try something else? So that's why, the real reason why material sense gratification is not good, because then it becomes a detour to endeavoring in the real goal, to achieve the real purpose of spiritual ecstasy. And of course, the highest material sense gratification is sexual gratification. Spiritual gratification. Prasadam. What was I going to say? I'm distracted. Oh, yes. So the... so the, when in the Shastras, it gives prohibitions. You know? So there's... So when we follow the restrictions of the Shastras, then there's three different types of devotees who follow. One devotee will do it because Krishna likes us to do that, so therefore I'll do it. It's like, you know, like a Pradyumna in the Krishna book. It describes that Pradyumna's experience with his father was that he might like something, but if he found out that Krishna didn't like it, well, I don't like it anymore. Because that's not what Krishna likes. And that if he did like something and found that Krishna didn't like it, well, now I don't like it. Because he is conforming his mind to Krishna. That's the meaning of Krishna consciousness. That we conform our will to the will of Krishna. Not that we become, the Maya bodies want that they become Krishna. So we become one with Krishna, not by ending our identity. We become one with Krishna in that our desires become those, whatever Krishna desires, that's what we want. What Krishna doesn't want, we don't want that. That's becoming one with Krishna. One in purpose. One in mood. So that's the first type of devotee. Well, Krishna likes it, therefore I'll do it, because it pleases Krishna. Second type, well, what's in it for me? You know, what benefit is there? You know, well, you know, cow dung is actually pure. It purifies the whole place. Right? Or if you wet your feet, if you wash your feet before eating, then it stimulates the appetite in your body. So therefore you should, okay, oh, it's good for my appetite. It doesn't matter that Krishna likes it. Krishna always washes his feet before eating. You know, you eat with wet feet, you sleep with dry feet. So, but just because Krishna doesn't like it doesn't mean, it has to, what's the scientific reason? They want to know, what's the scientific reason for doing it? What's the logic behind this? It doesn't dawn on them that the logic is that Krishna likes it. You know, Krishna likes it. Krishna has his tastes. He has his likes and his dislikes. You know, like, why do we knock on the door before we go into the pujari room? Krishna knows we're there. He's in our heart. Why? Because if Krishna came to your house, he'd knock on the door. Because Krishna is a person. And so we should also treat him because he likes that. He's a cultured individual. So he has a whole type of things that he likes to do. So if that's what he likes to do, then we should like it. But the second type of devotee is thinking, well, it doesn't seem logical. They want to know what's the law. And if they can't find the logic, then they become, you know, like, you know, then there's problems. Then there's problems for them. And then there's the third type of devotee who will do it. Well, if I don't do it, then all the sinful reactions that accrue, right? What's the negative? That they'll get some negative thing will happen to them if they don't do it. Then they do it out of fear. You know, as there's one place in the Bhagavatam that the wind blows out of fear of me, the rain falls out of fear of me, death goes about taking his toll out of fear of me. So they're doing things out of fear of Krishna. Not because Krishna likes it, not because what is in it for me, but just out of fear because, you know, they don't want to get some negative reaction. So we should try to aspire, well, to the point, well, because Krishna likes it, that's why we should do it. Don't require any long, logical exegesis, why, how it boils down from a material perspective, how it's good for us. Just that Krishna likes it. That should be good enough for us. It's good enough for Pradyumna, and he's feeling ecstasy. He's in the association of Krishna, because we want to be in the association of Krishna. That means we want to go. If we want to be in the association of Krishna, it means we have to go to the spiritual world. leaving the material consciousness. So in the spiritual world, it's Krishna's culture, it's Krishna's society. Everybody follows his rules. Everybody is doing it the way Krishna likes. So if you come to the party, you know, and you're not dressed according to the dress code, then they're going to ask you to leave. You can't crash. You can't storm the gates of heaven. I want to get in. No gate crashes allowed. You have to follow according to Krishna's way of doing things. Just because he likes it. And of course, since Krishna is perfect, it's naturally going to be perfect. So this is... And if we do that, then we'll begin to feel, when we fit in with Krishna society, we'll be with Krishna, then naturally that ecstasy, which is always there in us, will manifest because that's the nature of the soul. Sat, Chit, Ananda. If we understand the Brahman platform, then we understand that we're eternal. If we have Brahman understanding and Paramatma, then we also understand Chit, knowledge. But if we realize also Bhagavan, then we get Sat, Chit and Ananda. Because each one has a higher level of experience. And in Veda culture, they express different levels of happiness. You know, it's not that in Veda culture they're prudes, they don't know anything about material gratification. You know, after all, the Kama Sutra originated in India. In Veda culture, they knew about all material sense gratification. You know, in the Mahabharata, explains that when Madri informed Kunti about the death of Pandu, so what was Kunti's response? You know, because Pandu had been cursed that if he, had a seminal discharge, that he would die because he had inadvertently killed a Brahmin couple who had changed their forms into the forms of deers and were engaging in erotica in those forms. And so he killed the male deer just as he was copulating with his wife, so that he turned back into a Brahmin and he cursed Pandu that you will die in the same way. You will die when you are intimately associated with your wife. That's the background of the story. So when Madri informed Kunti what happened, Kunti's response was, well, at least you saw our husband with a smile on his face for once. Meaning that they were aware of these things, that you know, this of these material pleasures. But the difference between Vedic civilization and the West is that in the West they think that's it. There's nothing more, isn't it? And you keep trying different ways of doing the same thing, and then they don't go above that. That's just the beginning in Veda culture. That's not the end. It's the beginning. And this Dharma, Artha, Kama, and then is Moksha. So when the Brahma, the pleasure of Brahman is millions, in this is millions of times greater than any Brahma Sukha, is millions of times greater than any Kama Sukha. And then the pleasure of understanding of Paramatma, that's millions and millions of times more than Brahmasukha. And it keeps going up until finally you get to prema, which is the highest expression, highest taste. So it's not that Veda culture just are proved they didn't know anything and they're just self-abnegation. No, they knew all these things. But they also knew that this is not the end. It's just the beginning. And it's a big sign. And actually, if we just go after that, it just sidetracks us. If we try to experience pleasure through our body, then what will be the incentive for anything else? And the way that Krishna designed the body is that obviously we don't always experience pleasure with our physical body, isn't it? It's mixture. So one would think that after some frustration, people will give it up. But that's not what happens. I remember when I was in the university, I studied in psychology. So they made a point. They did a behavioral psychologist. They set up two cages, a monkey. And if the monkey pressed the button and every time something came out, they just, you know, they keep pressing and food would come out. But if they stopped, you know, supplying things, and after pressing it 100 times, the monkey would stop. In the other cage was a monkey that if you press the button, sometimes food would come out, sometimes food wouldn't come out. So that means sometimes he pressed it. The monkey knew that sometimes food couldn't come out, but sometimes it would come out. So then as they stopped putting any food, the monkey hammered that thing 1,000 times before he gave up. Because he was thinking, well, it's not coming yet, but maybe the next time. The next time something will come. Right? So because we, a mixture is there, we'll think, well, it didn't come this time, but the next time it'll come. So he until he broke the machine. Then he gave up, you know. So that's our problem, is we think, well, we didn't get it this time, we'll get it the next time. And that's the, so many material experiences are like that. Let's say about heroin addicts. Heroin addicts are always trying to relive the first time they took heroin, that experience. But they can never relive it, but they keep trying until they become totally destroyed. And they still, they're spending hundreds of dollars every day on getting more heroin, but they're chasing the first experience, chasing the dragon. And they get caught by the dragon, and they're destroyed. So that's a whole experience, material experiences, is trying to achieve some imaginary material perfection which just doesn't exist. And if we keep doing that, that's the real problem. Because then why will we ever try to achieve spiritual? What's the 10th offense against the Holy Name? To not have complete faith in the chanting of the Holy Name and maintaining material attachments. Because we think that we will get some pleasure there. We don't trust Krishna. We don't trust when Krishna says, you do this and you'll have some benefit. As of course we've been doing the other thing for a long time. It's the force of habit. So we have to reprogram ourselves in the right direction. Isn't it? So sometimes, often, you know, we have problems following the regulative principles. So this is so to give, as opposed to becoming very despondent and maybe giving up on the process, is a very good purport. Srila Prabhupada explains here, one of my favorite purports, in the 3rd chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. It's a very short, it's only one paragraph. So it's 331. Those persons who execute their duties according to my injunctions and who follow this teaching faithfully, without envy, become free from the bondage of fruitive actions. So, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada writes, the injunction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the essence of all Vedic wisdom, and therefore is eternally true, without exception. As the Vedas are eternal, so this truth of Krishna consciousness is also eternal. One should have firm faith in this injunction without envying the Lord. There are many philosophers who write comments on the Bhagavad Gita but have no faith in Krishna. They will never be liberated from the bondage of fruitive action. But an ordinary man with firm faith in the internal injunctions of the Lord, even though unable to execute such orders, becomes liberated from the bondage of the law of karma. In the beginning of Krishna consciousness, one may not fully discharge the injunctions of the Lord, but because one is not resentful of this principle and works sincerely without consideration of defeat and hopelessness, he will surely be promoted to the stage of pure Krishna consciousness. So, even though unable to execute such orders, but you know, Krishna's rules are good. Krishna's God. They're right. I'm wrong. I'm wrong. My heart is dirty. But this process is right. Even though I can't do it, the process is correct. You know, I read one Catholic newspaper. The title was, the heading, "Religion is meant to change man, not man religion." So other people will say, wow, these rules are too hard. You know, Krishna is just too, as a prophet was criticizing some of the scholars, I think it was Radhakrishna, Dr. Radhakrishna, says, Krishna is asking too much, we should surrender. He says, ask, this is too much. He's criticizing Krishna. You know, we have to reduce, we have to want more people to join, we have to reduce the rules. You know, they'll never join, this is too hard for them. That's not going to help anybody. Versus, and Krishna didn't know what's going on. Krishna doesn't know what's right. The doctor doesn't know what's necessary to cure the disease. We're going to make, you know, in the this one Ayurvedic text, the symptoms of a man who is about to die. One of them is being his own doctor. Trying to be their own doctor. That's a symptom of a man who's about to die. So if we don't trust what the doctor is saying and we think we're going to make our own rules, that's a symptom that we're going to die. That we're completely, you know, we're going to change things to fit the times. It's modern times. We have to change everything. No. That's not the way it works. The struggle for material existence is the same today as it was a million years ago. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. It's not any different. And it will not be different a million years from now. Even with the internet, it's exactly the same. Right? No, we have the internet today. What are they doing on the internet? Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. In cyber life. There's no difference. Ask, you know, all the pornography sites. That's just, you know, right there, sex, you know. They have cyber warfare. But the process of escaping from material suffering, since the problem is the same, the real problems are birth, death, old age, and disease. That was the problem before. That's the problem today. That's going to be the problem tomorrow. So that the problem is the same, that means the solution is the same. The problem didn't change, the solution doesn't change. So we have to stick to the process. Even if we can't do it, we at least, you know, that we don't criticize Krishna for making the process. You know, we don't envy Krishna. That's what Srila Prabhupada says. But one should have firm faith in this injunction without envying the Lord. Without envying the Lord. We have to... So then there may be some fall down. There's often this fall down. But we have to be like Vishvamitra. Vishvamitra Muni is often given a negative comparison with Haridas Thakur. Right? That Haridas Thakur, two prostitutes came to him and on two different occasions, and instead of falling down, he converted them. One was Durga, of course, the other one was a prostitute, and he converted her into a devotee. I don't think anybody, you know, at least amongst the men, then nobody's going to follow in the path of Haridas Thakur. Well, probably, I wouldn't want to have to face that challenge. But Vishvamitra Muni, he gets a negative comparison that when Menaka came, he fell down. But we can learn from Vishvamitra Muni. Yes, he fell down, but he got back up again. And he fell down again when Rumba came. But he didn't fall down sensually. He got angry and he just killed her, burned her to ashes. And he fell down. But then he got back up again. And the third time he fell down. But he got back up. And he fell down. He kept getting back up. He didn't stay down. And he became the guru of Lord Ram. Because he kept getting back up. So as long, you may lose many battles, just don't lose the war. Because as long as you keep fighting, you'll win. But as soon as you give up, you lose. Maya is just testing you. But if you're so stubborn that you don't give up, you're going to go find somebody who's not so stubborn. Just don't give up. Because he said that you will, such a person, one who is not resentful of this principle and works sincerely without consideration of defeat, there will be defeat. And hopelessness will surely be promoted to the stage of pure Krishna consciousness. So we have to keep fighting. As long as we keep fighting, we will eventually win. It's a multi-lifetime process. You've got a lot of time. You know, you're not going to go anywhere. So you might as well do this. What else are you going to do? What else are you going to do? You want to stay in this material world? From one Brahmanda to the other Brahmanda, Lord Chaitanya says, Brahmati Brahmanda Konya Bhagya Banjeev Guru Krishna Prasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Bija. So one Brahmanda is 40 billion human years in duration. And we're going from one to the next. So how many human lifetimes is that? How many lifetimes do you go through in 311,040,000,000,000 human years? Calculate it. If you give yourself 100 years, that's 3.1 trillion lifetimes in one universe. So what do you want to do? You want to fight and eventually win, or you just want to give up? Do you still want to be around? I've asked many people the question. With all the experiences you've had in your life so far, would you want to repeat your life again? Nobody said yes. So what are you doing about it? One of the advantages of being an astrologer, I was thinking, why did Krishna put me in this position? And I thought about it, I learned many things. Like a doctor, nobody comes to an astrologer unless they're in trouble. So I see vicariously all the difficulties that people have. And they're very rich people. I did the horoscope of the former Prime Minister of India, Devi Gowda. And he just was telling me about how miserable his life was. You'd think he was, you know, a used car salesman and whose wife had ditched him. And he's just, you know, like a whole litany of, and he's just the most powerful man in India. He has so much black money, you know, and just recanting a life that's miserable. So that's one of the advantages people suffer no matter who they are. So why should I aspire to be something like that? Why should I aspire for their material situation when they're not happy? Some of my clients are envious of me. They have, you know, couldn't even dream of having as much money as they have, but they're not happy. All the material things that they have, they're not happy. So what are we going to do in this life? The other thing, the other advantage of being an astrologer, I know I lost faith in anything about mechanistic science. Like, I've seen too many strange things, which are inexplicable by science. But the point, getting back to this, is that unless we make an effort now, we're going to still be here millions and millions of lifetimes from now. And I don't know about you, but I don't want to do that. So I guess we'll end here. So the process is, now we have to, the conclusion is, how to get this. We know how not to come to a situation of ecstasy, but how to achieve that ecstatic position. That is by, specifically in the Kali Yuga, via the pure chanting of the holy name. I think it was in the Vayu Purana, explained that the spiritual benefit that you get in 12 years of meditation in Satya Yuga, the spiritual benefit you get in 6 years of Yajna in Treta Yuga, the spiritual benefit you get in 3 years of Archana in Dwarpa Yuga can be achieved in one day in Kali Yuga by chanting the holy name. It's one day. That's the benefit. out of all the different negatives about the whole of the Kali Yuga, the great benefit is chanting the holy name purely. You know, so Lord Chaitanya, the Yuga Avatar, he has brought us the holy name, Sri Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. So we should engage in this chanting. In kirtan, sankirtan, our japa, listening. If you listen regularly to the instructions of Srila Prabhupada, his lectures will be very inspiring to us. As Srila Prabhupada said one time, I was in a deadline I had to move, so I didn't chant I was packing, eating, sleeping, packing. I hadn't chanted my rounds for like 10 days. But I was listening, I don't know, the whole time, 15, so many lectures per day. While I was packing, a brainless activity, I'm listening. So I was wondering, because normally if I miss my rounds, I don't feel good. So I hadn't chanted my rounds for days, and I was feeling really good. And I was wondering, why am I feeling good? And that very second, Srila Prabhupada said, because the words of the Guru is Krishna speaking to you. So these tapes, these recordings are mystical. It's not ordinary, you know, recordings of, just like the books are mystical. Whenever you read the books, it's like you've never read them before. Always some new realization comes to you, isn't it? If you're actually reading Srila Prabhupada's books. When you read Bhaktisiddhanta read the Chaitanya Charitamrita and the Srimad Bhagavatam 108 times each. Because as soon as he finished, he started at the beginning. Because each time it's fresh. Something new. You didn't notice before. Because now you are at a higher, more... These books are not ordinary pieces of literature. They are Krishna directly. And with the speak of Krishna's... The words of Krishna's devotee, they are not ordinary. They will speak to you. If you're listening, they'll speak to you. Because the words of the Guru is Krishna speaking to you. So you just have to listen. Now, to read, you have to take time out. You have to stop doing things. But at least, that's the beauty of listening to Srila Prabhupada's recordings, is you can be doing something else. Yeah, you can be ironing your clothes, you can be cleaning the house, you can be brushing your teeth, whatever, making your bed, eating, you can listen. And it goes into your heart, and it cleans out the dirt. And we'll become that much closer to feeling that ecstasy. Does anybody have any questions? What happened now? Okay. Did I do something? Any questions, comments, criticisms, complaints?
It's very nice when you say that when because it's directly Krishna, even the books are directly Krishna, I felt that before you sit in front of the Bhagavatam or Prabhupada's books, you don't have so much energy, but when you start speaking through the Bhagavatam, some kind of energy comes and you speak very boldly and very nicely. So I was thinking, as you mentioned, that I realized that it is Bhagavatam, because speaking directly from the book and the words is from is Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
So we get energy to speak, the power to speak.
In the last year, in April of 77, Prabhupada was very, very sick. He was very ill. I mean, he didn't live out the year. So he was at the Pandal program in Mumbai. So he was so weak, he was just sitting there and he was reading Bhavananda Swami, ex-Swami, reading. So he was reading from the fifth canto, 555, you know, that the famous verse, you know, hogs, dogs, camels. So after Bhavananda read the verse and read the purport, Srila Prabhupada, he just grabbed the mic and just started bellowing up, you know, like he was on fire. He was a man. He was very ill. He was very sickly, but he became so, you know, fired up. And there's one fantastic recording It was also in about April or May of 1977, Prabhupada was very ill. And so the followers of Shivananda and Chinmayananda came to see Srila Prabhupada. For some reason, Chinmayananda had respect for Prabhupada, even though he's a complete Mayavadi nonsense rascal. So Prabhupada said about him, don't insult him directly, because he has some favorable impression, but he's totally rascal. So they came to see Srila Prabhupada. And they came to pay their respects because Prabhupada was sickly, you know. And so somehow in the course of the conversation, they said, well, nobody knows the meaning of the Gita. Prabhupada, don't say nobody knows. You don't know, but don't say nobody knows. And they tried to back out, but they stepped into a bear trap. Now, Prabhupada was ripping off their arm and beating them with their own. You know, he was just beating, like, more and more. Then they tried to back out, and they said, well, you know, it's, you know, we learned this from our guru. Then Prabhupada says, Shrama Eva He Kevalam. You know, that means it's a complete waste of time. What you learn. He was like on fire. He was like a lion. And he had just, you know, very sickly, but he just became inflamed. He could never tolerate anybody who, and during that question and answer period in at the Pandal, people were coming up asking stupid questions. Prabhupada was practically knocking them over with his answers. You know, knocking them over. So bold. So strong. Complete faith. Trust. He had no doubts. No doubts. That's what made him, because he had made him very strong. Such strong preaching. And I just heard one conversation where Srila Prabhupada, the question came up about the purity. And then Hari Sori made the comment, a very pertinent comment, that if just your books had been there, nobody would believe anything. They said, this is just too hard. But seeing your personal example, that's why we have faith. That's why we have it. Prabhupada came and he was 80 years old at that time. You know, he only slept 4 hours a day. Two hours at night, 11 o'clock to 1 o'clock, and, you know, 2 hours in the early afternoon. And he published one volume of his books a month. Traveled around the world 12 times. Established over 100 temples. You know, of course, preaching, managing. You know, what author has published one volume of literature, 400-page books every month for 10 years? You know, he was wearing out his disciples who were like the age of his grandchildren. He was wearing them out because they saw his personal example. That's why they became completely convinced, because he was a living example, the leader. And he said, purity is the force. Not numbers. Purity is the force. It's a force, in the military it's called a force. There are different things which are force multipliers. You know, like a superior discipline. An army which has been very disciplined can outgun and can defeat an army which is, you know, multiple times bigger if it's got more discipline than the leader. Like the Duke of Wellington said, when Napoleon is on the field, it's like the addition of 30,000 extra troops. So Srila Prabhupada, he was the force multiplier, you know, millions of times. Because of purity. So if we achieve that purity, we go in that purity, then we'll also be useful. Any other question?
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for your wonderful class. Thank you very much. One question. Many times I've heard this statement that if you clap your hands in front of the deities, your karma changes, your destiny changes. Yeah, as an astrologer, I mean, these days, because
Srila Prabhupada said that, yes.
Yes. I mean these days, we always, it was the Kali Yuga atmosphere, we always require evidence to become convinced. I mean, in your service as an astrologer, have you seen maybe devotees' jobs or people taking devotional service and their destiny?
So you're wondering, what does it mean that somebody claps their hands?
I mean, is there evidence for example, let's say a person by their childhood was meant to go in a particular direction, have some accident,
what is the question?
By devotional service, can you see from the astrological chart that devotional service changes a person's destiny?
First of all, you have to understand what that expression means. That there's two types of karma. I'm not talking about good or bad. There's sanchinta karma and kriyamana karma. Sanchinta karma is the sum total of all previous karmas, and kriyamana karma is newly created karma. And in sanchinta karma, that's divided into two categories, arabdha and prarabdha. Arabdha is which is in potential, and prarabdha is that which has been put into action. Like if you go to the North Sea, you take out a glass of water, what's left is the arabdha karma, what's in the glass is the prarabdha karma. So by performing devotional service, as Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, it burns to ashes, just like wood burns, a fire turns wood into ashes. So all your arabdha karma gets destroyed. But prarabdha karma is not destroyed. Because if it was, then your body would fall off. Otherwise known as dying. You would die. And Bala Vidya Bhushan says that bhakti can destroy everything, but Krishna does not want it to destroy the prarabdha karma. Otherwise, who would be left to preach the Brahma Vidya? Who would be there to teach the spiritual knowledge? Is as soon as you get it, you die. Like, you know, when we get initiated, all our karma, you know, goes to the spiritual master. You know, when you see the yajna kun and there's 25 brahmacharis and on this side and 30 maharajas on this side, and then the yajna takes place, everybody dies. It must have been that purple Kool-Aid that they... Now, who's going to be the next, first of all, who's going to want to join the Hare Krishna movement? They will be in the Hare Krishna movement because as soon as they get it, they die. So it's not practical. You know. Krishna is a very practical person. So when you clap your hands in front of the deities, your arabdha karma is destroyed. But prarabdha karma is still going on. You know, there's a whole chapter. I mean, I wrote a whole essay, several essays on the subject. But it's described in the third canto, Kapila Dev, that on meditating upon the Lord in the heart, that when a God intoxicated devotee, when he becomes so intoxicated with God, he's just like a described. The verse says, just like a drunken man, intoxicated man is aware of whether or not he's wearing any clothing. I'm sure in this neighborhood you may have seen some people who are so intoxicated that they were in a very compromised situation. You know, they're not even aware of it, right? They're so intoxicated, they're not even aware if they're half clothed or whatever. In a similar way, a God-intoxicated devotee is not aware of whether or not he is wearing a body. And in such a condition, the Lord has to take charge of that body until the destined activities of that body are completed. Like suppose you're driving down the road, right? And the driver falls asleep. You have to grab the wheel. You know, Krishna's the co-pilot. He grabs the wheel because you fell asleep. So in this case, instead of you become totally unaware of whether you're wearing a body or not. You're in such ecstasy. But the body's activities, the prarabdha karma is not worn off yet. Then that purport, Prabhupada explains, the fan, you haven't got any fans in here because it never gets hot enough. But in India, we have fans, So the fans are going. But when you click the switch, no more electricity is going to that fan. But the fan is still turning. Right now, as long as you don't put the switch back on, the fan will stop. The destined activities of that body, they'll stop. And it may take one lifetime, it may take 100 lifetimes, 10,000 lifetimes. But what do you care? You don't even know that you're the body. You don't know that you're the body. Krishna's controlling that body till his destiny is there. So in that sense, the prarabdha karma doesn't affect because that's called a jivan mukta. He's not even aware of whether he's got a body or not. Like you go into a room, I went to the Brahmachari Ashram this morning to go to the bath. Everybody's sleeping there. I see their bodies, but they're dreaming that they're on Harinam Sankirtan, or who knows what they're dreaming about. I don't know what they're dreaming about. They're dreaming about something. They're somewhere else. Hopefully they're dreaming about going on. They could be dreaming about their ex-girlfriends. I don't know. But that happens when you're in, because dreams are real. Dreams are real. That's why when, you know, sometimes a person may have some nocturnal emission, or they get frightened. They see some horrible thing in a dream, they become frightened, because dreams are real. The difference between that reality and this reality is that dreams are not a shared reality. Baladeva Vibhushan explains, they're not shared reality. I'm not in your dream. I don't know what's going on in your dream. I mean, I may be in your dream for you, but I don't know what happened. You may be dreaming about me, but it's not the same. It's not a shared reality, but they're real because they're created by Krishna. And sometimes the dreams also can be, you experience some minor reactions of your karma are experienced in your dreams. You know, they're not enough that you're not going to win the lottery, but in your dream you won the lottery. You had that much punya. That much punya. At least in your dream you were happy for a few minutes. You know? I won the lottery. But you didn't have enough that you wanted in this dream. Which is why we dream in the first place. Why do we dream in the first place? Krishna explains why we dream. In the 11th canto, we dream. Why did Krishna create dreams? So that the sober person, a thoughtful man, will think when he wakes up, that seems so real. That seems so real. This also seems real. This world also seems real. So then begin to think. You know, like one Chinese philosopher said, am I dreaming about a butterfly? Am I dreaming that I'm a butterfly, or am I the butterfly dreaming that I'm a Chinese philosopher? You know, so dreams, you know, is to induce us to think about the nature of the material world. But this world also seems very, very real. But it's temporary. So getting back to your question, is that by any devotional activities we do in this lifetime, that destroys our Prarabdha karma. I mean the Arabdha karma. So once we take the spiritual life, I said there's past karma and then there's newly created karma. Not everything is from the past. You know, sometimes, you know, I met this boy. You know, and it's like we are like soulmates from a past life. I get this a lot of times. Boy or girl, you know, well, how do you, maybe it's for the first time. Because if it's always from the past life, then that creates the fallacy of the infinite regress that nothing ever happened for the first time. Things happen for the first time. That's called kriyamana karma, newly created karma. So a person may be on the path of devotional service, but what does it happen? They fall down. That's what the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is about. That's one of the topics. Arjuna asks, what happens? Somebody may fall down. So it's not that they didn't get any benefit. Their karma was changed, but not the Prarabdha karma. They have challenges. There was one, I mentioned this in the previous class, back I think it was in 1981, one very tall, handsome American devotee came up to me, he was a temple president. He'd been recommended for sannyas. What did I think about it? I said, no, I don't think you should. I looked at his hand and then I said, no, you shouldn't take sannyas. You shouldn't take sannyas. But then he took sannyas the next year. I said, well, what happened? Well, my sannyas guru said, you know, you're above all these things. Within 3 years, he had, not only did he bloop, he also joined the anti-cult movement and was attacking ISKCON because he fell down with some girl. You know, that fall down happens. It's a, you know, bahu janmanam ante, after many births. Right? It's not like we'll be lucky if we can do it all in one lifetime. We should try. But obviously I wasn't successful last time, so I'm here again. Hopefully I'll be able to make some more progress in this lifetime. So whatever. So whatever devotional service we do, that's counted. But doesn't mean in this, it's like, when I got on that airplane yesterday morning, you know, once you're on the airplane, unless somebody shoots you down, you have to, you know, get on in Bangalore and you get off in London. That's Prarabdha Karma. You know, you can't change that. But while you're inside the airplane, you have free will. So I chanted, you know, 50-some rounds like that. I didn't watch the movies. Everybody else was watching movies or sleeping or making conversation. So that's my free will. But that, you know, the Prarabdha Karma, that can't be changed. So that person was challenged. That person may be challenged. They may be, because karma, your life is an interplay of two things. You have your karma and your free will. Karma is the reaction of your previous exercise of free will. It creates a situation, it creates an environment, which, you know, then you have to make more choices. I suppose you were born in the ghetto, right? So you haven't got many choices. So you could say, you have two choices. You could say, well, maybe I'll get an education and get myself out of the ghetto. Or you could say, it's society's fault. You know, I'm down, blame it on society, I'll get back, I'll take up a life of crime. There are people like that, right? They do that. They blame everything on society. They're the victim, actually. But then they go and take it. So now what happens? They get caught. If they don't die, they get caught, then they go to jail. That's the reaction of their free will. Now when you're in jail, you still have a choice. You can decide to, well, maybe that was a bad idea, living, you know, like, maybe I should do something to get out of it. I could get an education. Because they educate you when you're in jail and then get out, come out with a degree. Or you could go and get an education from all the other criminals. You know, what did you do to get in jail? Okay, I better not do that. You know, learn how to become a hardened criminal. You have a choice. No matter what situation you're in, you can do something progressive. Because ultimately there's only two choices. The choice which brings you closer to Krishna and the choice which brings you further from Krishna. That's the only choices you really have. So, no matter which situation you're in, you have a choice. Because spiritual life is not dependent upon any material restriction. I like to give this one example. It's a material example. There's 1996, I heard this one radio broadcast. Because in the news, they gave four minutes of bad news, and then they like to give the upbeat on the last minute. So there's about this one French journalist. Give me the time when it's. So this one French journalist had just died. He had suffered a stroke 18 months earlier. The stroke was so debilitating that he could only move his left eyelid. He couldn't speak, couldn't do anything else, not even the right eyelid, just his left eyelid. But in that condition, before he died, he wrote and published a book of 150 pages. So how did he do it? Had a friend, had a chart with all the French alphabet, and he moved his finger, and when he got to the right letter, he blinked. He blinked. And he wrote a book. One blink at a time. Because he had a desire to do that. And that was just a material desire. But he had a burning desire to do it. So that if we should have even more desire to get out of this place. And if we don't, Krishna makes an arrangement so that you'll be stimulated to have that desire. Because the material world is perfectly imperfect, as my godbrother Shatadanya nicely put it. It's Krishna designed this place. It's a reformatory process. It's a reformatory. It's a jail. Jails are called correctional institutions, right? So they're made, this material world is made in such a way that Krishna gives us the nudge in one way or another. So in other words, it's very unpleasant. You know, birth, death, old age, and disease. They're very unpleasant. Yeah, what to speak of all the other things. So, then we're stimulated. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Jai. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai.
Krishna Guru ki jai.